This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3481 for Monday the 6th of December 2021. Today's show is entitled, HPR Community News for November 2021, and is part of the series, HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers, and is about 94 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, HPR volunteers talk about shows released, and comments posted in November 2021.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. Today, the community news for November 2021. Where has the time gone, Dave? Where has the time gone?
I know. It's how I feel too.
And joining me tonight is...
Hello. That mystery voice is Dave Morris.
We're doing it slightly earlier today because a... lot of stuff is happening in my life at the moment, and Dave was kind enough to move this forward. Not all of it is nice, unfortunately, but there you go. So this is the community news for November 2021. So what's HPR and what's the community news? HPR is a community podcast where the people who submit the podcasts are listeners very much. In fact, some would say exactly like you. And if you ever thought of becoming a podcaster, then this is the way to do it. You record a show and you go to our upload page and you fill in the form and you send in the show and then you become a podcaster. Couldn't be simpler. Great show to start off with is how you got into tech, your history with technology and how you made it to pressing that upload button. We'd love to hear it. And don't worry, we'll give you loads of ideas for new shows. So as this is a bit of a one-way speaking to the masses and having no clue how many masses there are, we make sure that we do a community news show once a month where every show is provided with a little bit of feedback and our thoughts and suggestions on what has gone on. We also take the opportunity to read out the show notes and go through anything else that's on the mail list, which is the governing body of HPR, more or less. I reckon. Have I got it in one there, Dave?
I think so, except that we're not reading the show notes, we're reading the comments.
That's correct, Dave.
I'm not reading show notes, I'm sorry. I'm not. Yeah.
You would think after 16 years we'd have this down, but apparently not.
Yeah, life gets like that sometimes.
Anyway, it's traditional that we read out the new hosts, and it's traditional that you do that, Dave. Don't know why, but...
So it is, yes. Well, we have...
Actually, I don't know why. It's because I butcher the names. That's why, yeah.
But we're getting some fairly easy-to-read names in our new hosts. We do have two new hosts this month, or last month, I should say. November, one of Spoons, a great handle. I do like that very much. I'd love to know the history of that one. And yep. DNT, who we mentioned, I think, the last show as a commenter, has submitted a show. So that's all good.
And I think they go on to explain where their handle comes from. So that's pretty cool.
Yes, that's good.
Super. So let's go through the first show of last month, which, oddly enough, was the community news. Community news we release on the first Monday of every month. Why? I don't know. I think we're mad. Consistency, that's what we strive for here.
Tradition.
Tradition, yes. Do anything three times and it becomes tradition. Yes. So there was an amazing lack of controversy, which, to be honest, I'm delighted with.
Yes, get too much of that sometimes.
Yes, we could do with a little bit less controversy and a lot more tech here. So we'll move on to the next show. And that was Atlatu with a series on databases. And I remember this one particularly well because I was underneath the floor in the crawling space. So anyway, enough about crawling spaces, Dave. Databases and why tables are difficult. Is that what this one was about? Yeah, it was about tables, yeah.
Yes, in various contexts, in the context of preparing documentation using Markdown, various other things, and HTMLs, tables, and I imagine database at some point, but I don't think we've quite got to database tables yet, but I don't doubt that we will arrive there soon.
Yeah, so this is how to format data. So it's more about the argument of do you use tables or do you use sequence of mappings, which is, I thought, an interesting question.
Well, the point about mobile phones being unable to make a good job of displaying tables because they're the size of the screens and stuff, and also the fact that not all web pages are configured correctly for that purpose, it is a very, very important one, I think, because I just detest my phone when it does this. So I'm sure a lot of other people feel the same way.
I particularly love it when you have a table that when you zoom in, the text around the table gets bigger and bigger and bigger, but the table remains the same size. That one is where you deliberately, you know, go the extra mile to be anti, to make it difficult for your the people viewing your website.
Yes, indeed.
Also, John Culp, this is why you do the intros of the new host, Dave. Tables and font size. He says, I love this episode, Latu. Somehow I find it really entertaining to hear all about the benefits and difficulties of tables, and it's something I've dealt with a good bit myself, but mostly in the context of ebook editing. In addition to the problems you mentioned, another one I find vexing is the impact of font sizes on tables. Yes, John, I feel your pain. One of the best accessibility features of ebook formats and e-readers is the user's option to change font size. When you're getting old like me and you typically increase the font size, you find that tables rarely survive the change unless you've got a big screen like a tablet. I will try almost any option to avoid making a table in one of my own ebook edits because it's too hard to predict screen size and font preferences. Lists will usually do the trick, just as you proposed in your episodes. Now I want to go look at your ebook.
Very good. Comment two was from Gumnos, I imagine he pronounces that. Storing data in Rexel format. I'm not sure if you've encountered GNU Rec Utils before. Gives a link to the GNU.org page. But it's nice. It's a nice flat file way of storing and querying data in a format similar to what you described. It's fairly easy to convert to CSV or other tabular format. It plays nicely with version control, making it easier to tell when a column, in quotes, really a row in a group, has been edited because the diff just shows that one cell, in quotes, rather than the whole CSV line is being modified. It's also pretty flexible when it comes to omitted or duplicate fields. I've taken to storing our household address book in this format and then transforming it into other formats as needed.
Now, I had never seen that before, and I had a look at the GNU documentation, and I must say, as with past experiences with GNU documentation, I found it difficult to follow. But it's... I would love...
Yes.
To show.
Absolutely. Yes. I know. I'm there ahead of you, really. I also looked at I'd never heard of it. I also looked at it, and I did have a play with it, and I thought it was absolutely lovely. Somebody has really come up with a great idea here to solve the sort of problems that we've been talking about with tables and lists and CSV and all these other weird formats. And it's great. It's absolutely great. And yes, we could do with somebody doing a walkthrough of what it will offer, I think.
I can't recall Gumnos. Gumnos.
I want that to say Gumnos, but.
Gumnos. My brain is so accustomed to seeing a capital G that I go Gnu-nos.
Nearly, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Got Gnu in it.
Has Gumnos done a show, Dave? Shall I check?
My guess is no, though I've seen the name in the comments before.
At the About Host page, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for the page to load, Dave. No, alas, there's a big red circle around the search field for that, Dave. That's No, I'm not angry, Dave. I'm just a bit disappointed. But what an excellent show that would make as a first show, don't you think?
I can't disagree with that at all. No, absolutely.
Excellent. The following day, Living in the Terminal to the obligatory sequel, and I read that as the obligatory squirrel. I don't know what's happening with my brain today. Probably related to yesterday. Anyway, a very tired Black Colonel tries to handle the feedback from the previous episode. Anything to do with terminals is popular here, Dave, on HPR.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, he did seem to be struggling a bit, as my notes said about this one. He was very entertaining, though. I did enjoy his show, but he was going back through stuff he'd been talking about and had answers to and comments on and stuff from the previous show. So very good.
Excellent. And definitely a horse that hit the ground running, I have to say.
Yeah. Yes, I shall look forward to more from my friend.
Super. The Linux In-Laws, the open source initiative. This was a good interview, actually. They're getting Deb Nielsen. They're getting quite a lot of interviews. I'm not sure if I prefer the interviews over the regular shows.
I do enjoy the interviews, and Deb Nicholson is a great interview guest. She has quite a sense of humour. I did enjoy her sense of humour. There's a sort of smile in just about everything she said. So, yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. Great stuff.
So Olivier said, Terminus DB link, hey, I see that you have linked to one of our blogs, and I'm just writing to let you know the URL has changed. So have we changed that already?
No, the person who released the comment completely forgot to go and make the change.
Yeah, and the person who, the other person who read the comment also completely forgot to make the change. So the person who also read the comment will leave that tab open and see if we can do that later.
It's probably good. Sometimes I reply to people and say, if you just queried admin at HPR, then we'd just do it without you needing to send in a comment. But in this case, the comment is a good reminder that we've... Oops.
Yes, oopsie, yeah. Dodge and burn. Layer modes with GIMP with dodge and burn. And I had a double take to see whether he was correct or not, but apparently it's a thing.
Yeah. I think I'd heard it before. I'd just seen it in passing and hadn't really paid much attention to it. It's not quite clear why. why it's called Dodge and Burn. It sounds like a sort of comedy duo in the old days of black and white movies or something.
The names are not intuitive at all, he says on his own blog. Dodge means lighten and burn means darken.
Yes. He did make a point of trying to explain, but not to explain why, I feel. But anyway, that's not really a focus problem.
And again, there's no comments on this, but and during every month, we will skip over hookah shows, not giving them the credit that they deserve. But this is like foundational stuff. You know, it's there. Every piece of architecture rests on a solid foundation and nobody looks at it, but it is a fantastic series. I'm learning so much from this.
Absolutely. Yes. It's always the way it's, well, yes, that's great, but I don't need it. And then the day comes when you do need it and you go, I've heard this. Oh, yes, I found it. And here's the answer. Yay.
Yeah. So, yeah, the following day we had we read out last month. We had we didn't have time to read out all the discussion about the branding, and it was important that we get feedback about changes to the branding. And this was the show where we read out that entire mail thread. And Mike says, "Is it my turn or your turn?"
I think it's probably mine. I think you did.
Go for it.
The last one. Clear his throat. So Mike Espeak Ray says, TTS, I made a small error in my comment on the subject about branding. I said the bit between TTS and Raucous Music was an advert for AHH, an honest host, because it's for archive.org. Now, I like the TTS. It gives me the chance to decide early whether to carry on listening or press delete and go to sleep. But the current TTS engine settings are used are boring. She sounds like a woman who's been awake for a week continuously. No prosody, no intonation. E-speak is much better, in my humble opinion.
Really, Mike? God, who would have thought Mike was a supporter of e-speak?
I could also speak faster for me personally. It could also speak faster for me personally, a lot faster. But I know all you photon-dependent types won't agree. Smiley face.
Smiley face, yes. Yes. Mike has done a lot about eSpeak previously. So this month has been essentially a test month where I have interpreted, well, as best I could, the feelings of the community and have tried my best to come up with something that will please everybody. Please some of the people some of the time, more of the people more of the time, but not all of the people all the time. So in the great sense of compromise that we have, we've lowered down this whole month. You should have heard various different permutations of the intro and outro. And after Mike's comment as well about the eSpeak thing, I went and changed the voice from Lynn from the Linux, lotofLinuxLinks.org podcast, if people remember that one, to back to eSpeak, which actually was a lot more difficult than it should have been. Lots of hoops had to be jumped.
Okay.
It's one of those things that with the eSpeak or with the Festival engine, you could specify the frequency of the sample rate, but not with eSpeak. So then I had to convert it to this, into that, and then it's just a pain in the butt. But it's done anyway. Both ways are now available. So if people have preferences, then that's fine. So what we have now is we have the intro, and it's a quiet intro, the guitar one. It's the same music for the intro and the outro, quite short. There's a little bit of silence. Then the text-to-speech comes in as an overlay over the intro music. And then basically the show. And the whole thing, so the text-to-speech does include important information like the license under which the show has been released. So this particular show released under this particular license, because the default generic outro has information about what our default license is, so unless otherwise specified, it's blah. And because enough people seem to find the intro and outro, or the at least the text-to-speech thing, useful. I personally did anyway. So that's left in. And the outro has been cut down as well. And we've included a very quick thank you to the people who provide hosting. The exact text of that is likely to change as well. But that also just makes us, I think, easier and shorter as part of the outro. That needs to be re-recorded, unfortunately, with all the stuff that's going on here. I haven't been able to get my wife into a sound booth where we can record it. But if somebody wants to, and I didn't want to either, because the outcome of that show and today's show is that unless people are complaining about it, we're just going to continue on doing this. I'm going to assume that this is the correct direction for theme music from now on. No host, don't provide intros and outros. And we have this format, which actually is a lot easier to process. And we were able to get the, was it you that sent me the FFmpeg of the waveform thing?
Yes.
That's absolutely brilliant, Dave. There is one thing that I wanted to do. We've added normalization to the shows, which you see quite a lot. But what we don't have is loudness normalization, which I sometimes need to do. I get the waveform, and then I can see if there's a massive difference between the intros and outros. And then I'll go in and do a loudness normalization. I wanted to do that using scripting in Audacity. And the Audacity plugin to do that, it's called Mod Pipe something, Mod Pipe Script. has been brought into the, is no longer a plugin that you can add. It's something that's part of the main Audacity build, but apparently none of the distros are shipping with it, so it's no longer available as a plugin, and it's not in the code, so I don't know where it is. So that's kind of frustrating. So if somebody can tell me how to do loudness normalization with FFmpeg, that would be absolutely awesome. Tattoo! Oh, I'm a confident.
Yes, I'm sure there's some knowledge out there somewhere, but can be hard to find. FFmpeg is a beast.
Oh,
it's so complex.
It's fantastic, though. There is nothing that with audio is the... A lot of the scripting that I'd previously been doing with SOX, I just switch over to FFmpeg because it's a lot easier.
It just
doesn't care. So where are we? That was on that show. Is there anything else on the intro and outro, Dave, now that we're talking about it, that you want to bring to my attention?
I did notice the last show I listened to, which is probably one in December, there's an odd buzzing sound in the guitar intro. I'm not quite sure what that is. I'm not sure it's in every show. I'm not sure if that's getting clobbered by some process later on, once it's been attached or something. But I meant to highlight it and point it out to you, which I haven't done yet. But I'll try and remember to do that after this show.
Sure. And can I ask anybody if you've got comments on the quality of the audio of any show, go to that show itself and click on it and add the comments to that show, particularly if you're doing the future feed. So if you're following the future feed, which I'd love all you audiophile people out there, while you're getting your setup to be perfect before recording shows for us, if you could tune in to the future feed and give us a heads up on whether the audio meets your requirements or not, and what you think it could be, then we can give you the... actually, if you just browse to the source files are available to you for padding and fixing. But anyway, technical issues aside, it's more about the structure of it. How did you feel the structure that we have now reflects the feedback that we got both on the mailing list and on the Matrix channels, Dave?
Mm-hmm. My view is that it does a great job, actually. I keep stopping to clear my throat. I did have a message from somebody on Telegram saying, what's up with the HPR's intro, outro stuff, and I can't bear it and things. I said, we've changed it, go and have a listen to the latest one, and came back and said, oh, it's wonderful, I love it. So, that was an audience response, then I think we're probably heading in the right direction. In fact, I think we're quite close to the goal that we all envisaged.
Yeah, I think it's just short enough, 30 seconds and 30 seconds each side, about a minute. It's not 40 seconds each side, so it's not hugely massive. It keeps the HPR theme, and we thank who we need to thank, and we also provide the information about the show itself. So yeah, I think it's working.
Yeah.
Then again, I would, because I did it. So, but
yeah.
Anyone's got comments, please comment on this show, telling us what you do and you don't like about it. Because as with the mailing list, if we don't hear from people, we assume you agree. Okay. Moving on. Enough about this. Metal marbles. I had no idea what way this was going to go, Dave.
No, not quite.
But it's an introduction to the host with a reference to semantic playgrounds. Loved this show. If nothing else, I loved the handle, one of spoons.
Yes, I do enjoy that very much.
Keep them coming, please. Keep them coming.
Yes, I I was a little bit sort of bamboozled by this one. It was one of those I marked down as go and listen again because I think you missed some of the some of the subtleties. But the business of how you remove rust from things is quite interesting, as well as all the other stuff.
I had I do spam checking on all new hosts on all shows actually. Get spam checked. Even ones from well-known hosts. So, which involves just scrubbing through the audio to make sure words come up. Is this spam or not? So, and usually afterwards, I as you know, Dave, we're not supposed to listen to the shows prior to them being published. But that one was very, very tempting. I go, what? Is this what is this about? Is this about this? Ah, right. Okay, right. What I'm going to do is publish it and then listen to it.
Yes, absolutely.
Ah, great show. Love it.
Interesting. Good. Yes, looking forward to more.
Following day, Clonezilla, a backup story. Rowan walks through the process of backing up his laptop with Clonezilla. Dun, 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 dun. Out of the depths it came. You hear the sound. You know your hard disk is about to die. Will Clonezilla save you? Tune in to Rowan's show to find out exactly how and why. Okay, that was a bit weird.
But the show is an interesting format.
Yes.
It's not the sort of sit down and listen closely type of show. It sort of have it going on in the background while you're doing something else. There was a certain level of pain in there that I recognized.
Yep.
it was good to share that, I think. So and I think Archer 72 on Matrix said the bird sounds in the background were good, and I wholly agree. It's quite nice to have those sorts of ambient sounds and stuff.
Yes, agreed. I also like these shows because you know that he's going to post it regardless of whether it works or not. So there's a problem, and we don't know if it's going to get fixed or not. So it's like, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? I've been there. Thankfully, it's not me, but there's also an element of I feel your pain as it goes on. But Clonezilla is a very good tool if people haven't come. It's not as popular now, that whole, you know, cloning a hard disk as it used to be, but it'll still save your buttocks if the midden hits the windmill, as they say.
Oh, yeah. As somebody who just recently lost his 4 terabyte Western Digital disk, I did. It died in a control way because I had. What's the thing that monitors your disk? The name's
Smart something or other?
Yes. SMART is the mnemonic, isn't it? And it said, your disk looks a bit yucky, you better back it up quickly. So I went and backed it up quickly. So
very good.
It seems to be totally dead. I've got it in an external disk caddy thingy trying to do something with it, and it seems to be totally and utterly dead. So not fun. So I do sympathize with that whole process.
The following day, Being Irrational by Andrew Conway. And I was listening to this on the bus coming up from work, which I thought was a very irrational thing to be doing. And it turns out I was right. Yes, and he recommends some thoughts on how we think started rattling about my head. In this show, I riff on that and talk about the importance of our irrational mode of thought.
Well, yeah. A fascinating and different view, and very true. I wrote down, rationality isn't everything. We do some things that aren't strictly rational, but more intuitive or subconscious. So being irrational isn't necessarily bad. That was my summary of the show to me. He's got some excellent points there. And it needs more thought and more work, I suspect, to understand them well. Just going by gut feeling is not enough. But there's a hell of a lot of things that we do which are based on that sort of thing and instincts and just generally irrational, but repeated intuitive behaviors and stuff.
Yes, I agree with him to a point, but there is a point where I don't agree with him. Brian in Ohio says, a serendipitous quote, as I always enjoy the show, I logged into my new, to me, ARM-based running laptop, show coming, excellent, running Slackware, and my fortune says, I have hardly known a mathematician who was capable of reasoning. Says Plato.
yeah. Interesting.
Very, very good. Okay, moving on. But a good show. I like it. Keep throwing throw that sort of stuff into the mix. Excellent.
Yeah. Andrew's quite a deep thinker, so it's good to hear this sort of thing from him.
Yes, but he's usually wrong. and best to discuss that with a pint of Belgian beer in Foster. I still am waking up at night with arguments about counter arguments to his arguments to me at Fostem about the GDPR. But anyway, we will, whenever we get back to Fostem, I will happily argue with him more on that.
Yes. Looking forward to that time as well. Yeah.
Speaking of people who we met at Fostem and are looking forward to meeting at Fostem again, is JWP with his Walmart on 7-inch tablet Gen 2. Like these throwaway little episodes about stuff.
Yeah, JWP is a great collector of strange and wonderful bits of hardware, and which he dotes on and looks after very carefully and stuff. So yeah, it's good to hear this stuff. There's one comment from Pipe Man Music. It's a name you haven't heard for a long time. Yep. Real numbers to an offhand comment. I'm always of two minds on low-cost tech when I see it. It can be a burden on one side of the economic ladder and a boon on for another. I usually fall on the side of access to technology can provide a net good. I do, however, feel compelled to point out Mississippi has the highest deaths per 1 billion people in the United States. I think JWP felt otherwise about it.
About that comment about useless tech, I have two tablets that I got. One was on the recommendation of the Linux Link Tech Show, and the other was given to me by my father-in-law. And both run Android, and both have been universally useless. So I'm loath to throw them away because they're fully functioning. They're also... I'm loath to give them away to the secondhand shop because I would spare you from the I would spare our people from the torture, the pain and torment of actually having to use them. So I'm in this quandary, and it's the same with some of the. I've got a stack of laptops here, old laptops that were given to me or that died. They're no longer supported. There were Chromebooks that are no longer supported. So. What do you do with these? I'm struggling with where do I put my baseline for this is the minimum piece of tech that I have. I don't mind keeping a few laptops around. Oh, this is an EEE PC from back in the day, and it's now running the latest version of Linux. But, Puppy Dog, I just installed. That's great. I've got everything running. It's fantastic. But am I ever going to use it? No. When I plug it in, you know, it's the fan on it sounds really large. It's really loud, but it's quite small and it's a unique piece of tech. So, yes, I'll probably keep it. But the rest, you know, crappy old laptops, what do you do? Do you use them? Do you give them away? Will somebody else find use for them?
It's a difficult one. I've just tended to throw them in the recycling. all of that sort of stuff. I used to collect this sort of business. I had some mad idea of using some old desktop machines clustered together, but then when you look to see how much power those things,
exactly,
you don't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah. So. There you go. If I've got an emotional attachment to it, that's fine. But as with everything else, there can only be a limit on it. And As for the other laptops that I've received from somebody else, I'll if they're fast enough to play Minecraft, ish, then I'll put Linux on them and give them into the secondhand shop.
Yep.
So, why HPR has less downloads? Another one from JWP. For he has violated the rule, Dave. Thou yes. shalt not have two shows from the same host in 2 weeks. Although that said, we had a call for shows open, so yeah, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Also, it's JWP. He's got loads of guns, and he knows how to use them, so do whatever you want, JWP. It's fine. Plus, he buys us beer when we're in Fostem, so do whatever you want, JWP. It's fine. There's one comment from Ken Fallon. So this show was about why he thinks podcasts may be on the decline. He switched from being 16 hours in the car to being working from home. And then second reason, he doesn't want to listen to shows about people who don't share the same values. And the third is the U.S. Army opened up their online library, so he's got lots of audiobooks. Yep, three valid reasons. And I say, I just checked again, and the last quarter there has been a recovery of subscribers up 11,000 listeners to pre-lockdown levels. I don't know why I didn't actually put in how many we have. I suspect this was triggered by the return to work and the loosening of restrictions. However, as winter hits the Northern Hemisphere and another wave approaches, I predict the falling numbers again. Actually, I should do that in. As the winter hits the Northern Hemisphere and another wave approaches, I predict a falling of the numbers.
Yes. I think you might be right. Although, I was just watching a summary of the new Omicron.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Omicron variant, and the general consensus seems to be it's not as serious as everybody's getting worked up about. But who knows? Who knows? We could be in for another nasty bout.
Proton Mail in the terminal. Proton Mail, yes, is a mail client. And this is a show by DNT. And this was interesting. This also made me think, maybe I will stick with Thunderbird after all, because, wow, that's a lot of work to get your email going.
Well, and this, yeah,
this is one I also listened to twice, to be honest.
It's one I'm going to come back to. What strange names of commands. Not much, a few, a lot. That threw me when I was processing the notes. Hang on, what's this? But I'm fascinated with the fact that Proton Mail didn't want you to use external clients. I've got a Proton Mail account, which I use very, very, very rarely. And I was disappointed that I couldn't point my Thunderbird at it. But obviously human ingenuity has come up with ways around this. And it fascinates me that this all of this exists. I'm definitely going to have a play at that. See if I can look at stuff and control Proton Mail. It's webmail thing's fine, but I don't want to be using webmail.
Then it's not webmail. It's not mail. It's a proprietary messaging application that they call mail. Like the thing where you go to a website and you have to give feedback, and they say, "Oh, send us an email," and then you're dumped into a form. It's not an email. You might be an email to you, but it's not an email to me if I can't use my own email client. But anyway, okay, fine. Pedantic.
I quite like the ones where it says send us an email and you click on it, and all of the behind the scenes Thunderbird opens a thingy window, which usually is behind the web browser and hard to find.
So you go, what's going on? And then you close the web browser and there's 15 different email things open.
That's right, because you've been hitting it saying, where did it go? I can't find it. that happened just the other day. I do quite like that capability. And yes, We used to run with webmail at work at university for a while. What did we use? Roundcube and various things like that. I can't remember. But they were just alternative ways of getting to your IMAP mail and later to your horrible Microsoft Mail stuff. But that's a whole other thing to talk about. They seem so limited. They are so limited in comparison to proper clients. Anyway.
Yeah.
But intriguing.
And this one I'm filing away for. There are a lot of tools in here that I will mix and match later on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
At some point.
No, there's some good lessons to be learned from this. I must. There's some full show notes which have been attached as well, which is great. So yes, congratulations on the quality of the show notes.
So the next day was distro upgrade intervals for my Raspberry Pi. It was a cold morning. I was sitting on the bus waiting at the recharge station because the bus runs on batteries and it gets recharged. And you have to get out of the bus while it recharges. A topic for another day, Dave. Not really relevant to a discussion about Debian long-term support distro upgrading intervals on my Raspberry Pi. But quite interesting, actually, from that point of view.
Indeed. I enjoyed to hear from Mr. X. He's always got a different take on these various things. And he has difficulty keeping his Raspberry Pis up to date. And I sympathize with that. That's another task for me to do soon, is to get Ansible doing the right thing and
exactly
upgrading them all and good stuff like that. But yeah.
This is why my response to this problem was to my idea was to just use a clone, a new image every so often, go around to each Raspberry Pi, take out the SD card, put in a new one, and then use Ansible to blow it down. And that's fine, and it in theory will work, but it's still scary, Dave.
Yes. I haven't really got my head around all the things I want to do. I'm just making a list of all the stuff because I like to share all my etc. hosts across all my Raspberry Pis.
Yeah.
So on reflection, maybe I should just run a DNS off my Pi hole. So you know, there's all sorts of. I always get stuck in the weeds of these things. You know, I think, right, here's what I'm going to do. And then I look, but before I do that, I have to do that. And before I do that, I have to do something else. And
yes, so, I agree. And what you should do, Dave, what you should do, and not me, because I will never do it, what you should do is write it down and then record a show asking people what their opinions would be.
yeah. Which is the best approach for all of these good things. Yes. And in the interim,
yeah.
past month, I also got fiber installed in my house. So
whoa.
That caused my new router to not be quite the same as my old router, not too surprisingly. But it doesn't let me run Pi holes. I want to solve that.
Following day, we had Linux in-laws. The great battle or not are relating to SQL, NoSQL, Redis, etc. And again, you're wondering where are they going with this, but good technical show, actually, that didn't have any comments to it.
No, I came, it's fascinating. It was a fascinating show, and got a good insight into the relative merits of SQL, NoSQL, and stuff. But I wasn't quite sure I understood all the pros and cons very clearly. I'm not sure if they, maybe they pointed at other discussions about this, but I wouldn't know which one to choose, given that a lot of the SQL databases have responded to NoSQL by putting some of the goodies from the NoSQL world into their relational databases and things of that sort. So, I'm thinking mostly of Postgres, which I don't use much these days, but you know, it's it has certainly got the ability to store great big blobs of JSON in it and all that good stuff. So yeah, I'd like to know more. basically.
And I think that was the outcome of the show, that depending on which side you are, the waters are very muddy now nowadays. And there are lots of consultants getting lots of money to give you the answer that they want you to hear.
Well, I'm glad it wasn't just me being a bit dopey and not at all fully following it.
There's recently an article going past our internal chats about this very thing about people are claiming, people claimed that SQL databases are dinosaurs, but the article, while not adding anything new to the discussion, I thought myself, did say, no, they're not dinosaurs, they're sharks.
Yes. Yeah, very good point. Very good point.
Highly evolved killing machines that are still as relevant today as they were back when they initially evolved.
You do not need to evolve significantly further to continue doing what they do.
Yeah. So, next day, more on DOS this time. It's external commands and emergency boot disks. I had to chuckle at this. I have my second job. I had a Ken's multipurpose super disk, and all the staff had one of those in their pocket. But no matter what happened, you could go up to any computer, plug it in, and it had all the drivers for all the network cards that we had, and it had a DOS menu that it would connect, do the HyMem.sys stuff, depending on what PC it was, and then connect to the Novell network at the time and download the drivers that you needed and re-image the PC and all sorts. So, yeah, this brought back unhappy memories. Well, not happy memories, just not unhappy memories, but just memories.
Yes. I think I said before, I didn't really play in this arena very much, because the PC guys were...
You had real computers, didn't you?
And I was looking at... Yeah, well, it's a debatable point, really, but I had to look after the mainframe, as we called it. It wasn't really... It was a sort of bunch of mini computers, really. But I had to look after that. That was what I did 9 to 5. And the PC guys were all off doing their jolly things, and including installing Novell NetWare. Which I thought was reasonable, but yeah, did the job. But yeah, so this all passed me by, or I passed it by. So it's interesting to hear, though.
Trey says, "Oh, what happy memories! Thank you for bringing back memories from early in the computing career. I still have an MS-DOS 3.11 emergency boot disk because it was the first to support hard drive partitions above 33 megabytes. For the longest time, I kept it in the very front of my floppy disk case, but then I tossed all the old PC floppies. I relocated it to the esteemed location of stuck on the fridge door with a magnet. Likely won't boot anymore, but still brings back memories. Keep up the good work."
Yeah. I found the boxes those types of 1.4 meg or something discs when I was clearing the house recently, plus also the box of BBC Micro 5-inch, were they 5-inch discs?
Yeah. The actual floppy discs.
Those are the real floppy ones, yeah. It did have some 8-inch somewhere, but I don't have any devices to use them. Yeah, we had 8-inch. We actually booted our VAX cluster from a device that ran CPM and needed an 8-inch floppy disk. So that was what poked the VAX cluster nodes and said, "Oi, wake up and start booting," and all the stuff that they did. And so people used to say, "Well, that's a exciting looking computer you have there, but what are those funny PC things on a stand in your control room?" And we'd say, that's how it works. Anyway, enough of Dave's
memory lane here.
Kevin O'Brien says, "You are most welcome. I'm glad you enjoyed it. There are more in the pipeline, but once they're done, there won't be any more of this series. I wrote these 20-something years ago, and I still get happy users who find them on my website." That's a great achievement there, Kevin. That's a It's really something to be proud of, to have such a collection, I think.
Can you imagine the poor sucker who gets a job, like, you know, fulfilling their dream of being an IT specialist in some factory somewhere, and then there's a dusty old PC that completely controls every part of production, right? That's never been upgraded, and it just works.
Yeah,
and it's,
yeah, yeah.
It's running DOS, and you go, what the hell is this? And then you hit Kevin's web page, and it's going, I love you, man.
yes, I love all these stories. Classic. We had an engineer who used to come periodically to do maintenance on our machine, and one of the things he did was he went around various factories and stuff that had VAX equipment in it, and he came in one day and said, oh, I've just been to such and such a mine. There's a lot of mines in this part of Scotland. Mm-hmm. And they said they were having problems with their VAX, so I took the lid off. It was full of coal dust. That's why it wasn't working. I like that. I wish he'd taken pictures. That would have been great to go in some sort of historical document.
Speaking of history and legacy, we have a Sony Walkman WMF41 from John Culp. A quick talk about my favorite legacy audio devices. A genuine Sony FM-AM cassette Walkman. Oh, did I want one of those when I was a lad, Dave? Did I want one of those?
Yeah, I know. They're wonderful things.
Trey says, capacitors, thank you for sharing, tinkering with vintage electronics. Wait, referring to the Walkman as vintage makes me feel really old. It's lots of fun. Do you find the need to replace capacitors in equipment of this era? I have noticed that various radio gear from a similar age, the capacitors have drifted far from spec. Thanks for an awesome podcast.
And Keith says, they really are great devices. Thanks for making this. I do remember getting one back in the early 80s. However, that's no longer around. Shame I threw it out many years ago now. I'm going to get out my dad's Walkman on the weekend, though, and see if it still runs. I kept his Walkman WMF2015, and it gives a link to a website, as I knew it was special. Hopefully it still runs. If not, I will fix it up.
And John himself replied, recapping, thanks for the comments, Trey. Yes, the Walkman is vintage nowadays, and we're in the same boat old age-wise. I have a couple of things that would probably benefit from being recapped, but I've never gotten into the weeds that far yet. One of these days, I've got some time in front of me, I would like to replace the capacitors on my Pioneer reel-to-reel tape deck. It feels like this would probably help the weak left channel. No time right now, though.
Cool. Yeah. These were fun machines. I never had a Walkman, but I did buy a sort of Walkman-like thing when I was in mm-hmm. when I first went to Singapore. You could get a lot of electronic stuff in the various market
plasticky
areas.
Cheapy.
Some of it was quite good though. the technique in Singapore was that people would go into the main shops and say, can I have a look at the such and such? And then they'd say, thank you very much. And they walk out and down the street and into one of these markets and buy the same thing for considerably less. And yeah, if you knew what you were buying, you could get some good stuff. You'd also get some amazing crap. Yeah, anyway, I do have that around somewhere, which I found when I was tidying recently. So I must see if it actually works.
So the following day, consuming an AQI API, just because the sky is clear doesn't mean it's safe to breathe. Okay, that came out like a, red sky at night, shepherds delight, sky at morn, shepherds warn.
Aphorism or atmospherism or something, yeah.
Old saying, Dave, I think is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, that sounds easier.
Yes, a bit sad actually. Sign of the times. Just because the sky is clear doesn't mean the air is safe to breathe.
Oh.
Probably. Just because the sky is clear doesn't mean we need to come up with a rhyme. Anyway, one comment. This is about using the API for air quality index.
Yeah. This is cool. This is excellent. I do. This is a real piece of hacking. I do feel it's really good. And to actually get it to alert you to bad days when you need to put the blankets up the windows and hide under the bed or something is good. Yeah.
And to protect his privacy, I changed the latitude and longitude of his house, just in case he didn't already. Kevin O'Brien says, I love the show. This is a perfect example of hacking. Fantastic.
Yes, I quite agree with that.
And people out there, this is how the web works, or at least it is until Web 3.0 comes, when it's all going to be blinding your blobs and you can't look at it anymore. But this is stuff that you can do. You can access these APIs, and so long as you don't pull the urine, then with the number of calls per second, they won't even know.
Yeah. It's the way it should be. I've got a thing here telling me when the next 44 bus is due, which is working on that. Not anything
stuff,
I've, nothing clever that I've done. I'm using somebody else's software to do it, but it's useful. Should I need a 44 in the next 6 minutes, I know I can run up the hill.
Excellent. Well, we better speed up then. Then we had a show from our ham radio series, which has been getting quite a lot of activity at the moment. Dave the Love Bug explains his journey into amateur radio, initial setup and successes. Excellent show there. And do you want to do Trey's comments, both of them?
Yep. Trey says, congrats. Congrats on earning your amateur radio license. It's always interesting to learn some of the difference between operations in different countries. For example, here in the USA, it's generally frowned upon to call CQ on the 10 meter and 70 centimeter bands.
He means 2 meter there.
He corrects that in a second.
Yeah.
It's 2 meter band instead of 10. These are littered with repeaters, we often simply transmit our call sign. I look forward to additional amateur radio episodes, and I'm planning to post one about my GoBox build, assuming I ever get out of the planning phase and into the building phase.
How about you just
73 means?
73s is something that I'm planning on doing a show about shortly, but it is a shortcut for best wishes.
Cool.
So if you ever see amateur radio, they tend to sign 73 and then the person, or they send 73s as in best wishes, just best wishes, double plural, I'm sure, and loads of people get annoyed about that.
Trey comments on his comment to correct his 10 meter to 2 meter. Should we say that we are able to edit comments if you want us to make a correction? I'm certainly happy to do it. It's a trivial thing to do. So if you ever find yourself having sent a comment where you've made a small mistake, please, rather than an entire rewrite, then I'd be happy to make a correction if that helped you.
Sure. Yes, Trey should definitely do a show about a Go Box, because I have no idea what that is. And I was thinking there about the CQ thing. You'll find that there's lots of stuff with your license telling you what you should and shouldn't do, but in practice it'll be slightly different. So in the exam they're looking for the answer, which is always give your call sign and go CQ blah blah blah, because that's the best operating practice, but in practice do whatever it is that other people do.
Mm-hmm.
But that's doing whatever other people do in the exam is not the correct approach, because you will fail.
That being the nature of exams, of course, yes.
Yes, exactly. They're not looking for the right answer. They're looking for their answer.
Yes. Use a bit of common sense is not a valid answer.
No. HPR and audio fun operator. And this is... Yeah, lots of interesting ideas in this, actually.
Yeah. Tons
also,
of
the GitLab link to GitLab, anonymoushost.com, is saying, yeah, I think, oh, it's moved off that. We need to update the URLs. And I have a comment on this one, which is, no, please Don't add silence to the audit. Hi all, this is a great idea to record a piece of silence to use as a noise profile for using the effect-noise reduction feature in Audacity, but please do this before you upload to HPR. The show was about asking hosts to leave a piece of audio at the beginning, a piece of silence, so that a as yet unwritten piece of background scripting would be able to use that as a noise profile. But unfortunately, my point in this comment is that on piece of unscripted software would be called Kenneth Fallon, and I I don't want that. Anyway, back to the comment. It is opening a can of worms to ask hosts to submit this before having a process in place to deal with it. If we learned anything from is it included or not for the intro and outro thing? God, this, I don't know what I was thinking when I wrote this. Anyway, is that everyone will do their own thing. Will the silence be at the beginning or at the end, or is it in the middle? Is the silence intentional? Will truncate silence work? And it's a great idea for hosts, but please, 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 please do not do this. So that's the end of the comment, but maybe I can be a bit more elicit in saying that people do not do the same thing all the time. Even the same person between shows sometimes would upload the intro, sometimes wouldn't, and it was a pain in the ass, and it prevented automation of the show submissions, because we never know if somebody has put in the intro or not. Or sometimes you would see two intros in, or sometimes you would see intro at the beginning and the outro at the end. And all these things have to be fixed by somebody because it cannot be automated. Putting in silence at the beginning means then that I would need to do truncate silence, but perhaps the show is about the silence of listening to the birds on the heath or something. And then all of a sudden you have a show that's gone from 2 hours down to 5 seconds.
Yes, indeed.
Is my point coming across, Dave? Are you getting a sense of my feeling on this topic?
I can just sort of sense a message here falling gradually. Yes, yes. Don't do it.
And also, I'm also a bit loath to mess too much with people's audio, because there's an element of, you know, when somebody submits a show, there's an assumption that we're going to convert it to different formats because you sent it in FLAC and we downloaded it in OGG. So therefore, something happens. However, where does editing of the audio start interfering with somebody's vision of the piece? Yeah. So that, are we now censoring by cutting out blocks of silence, for example? So to be very, very careful about messing with the audio. And the best thing to do is have people do that first. You send up your show perfectly every time. And if you don't know how to do that, you send it up and then you tell us, can you please fix the audio?
Yep.
Perhaps you struck a nerve, Dave. Just when you thought all your automation problems were going to be over, then somebody... no, operator's a good guy. There were some actually very interesting discussions in that episode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely, definitely. There's a lot of...
do please keep them coming. Mm-hmm. How I watch everything using open source software, using libreelelec, Kodi, a tuner, and a Raspberry Pi to create a great media server. Minix, excellent. Loved the show. And lots of tips as well. Although I don't watch as much TV Headend. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant piece of kit.
Yeah, it is. He obviously, well, I know he knows a lot about this because he talks about these sorts of subjects on the show whose name just escaped me. Linux Logcast.
Linux Logcast, correct, yeah.
And it's a fascinating collection of pieces to do the job. So yeah, fantastic stuff.
On my list, now that the house has been redone, is to put up several satellite dishes to pull down channels with TV Headend which allows you to basically monitor feeds, and then set up an automatic recording and stuff based on those feeds. So cool stuff.
Yeah,
keep them coming. My must email setup by Archer72. There at the corner of the room, Dave. Occasionally when he speaks, but doesn't speak that often. But when he speaks, we hear, Dave. We hear.
Oh, absolutely. Now this is powerful stuff. This is really good. I probably said before, and I probably said this to Archer72 himself, that I've tinkered with Mutt and never really got to a point where I could use it. Partly because I probably didn't put enough effort into mm-hmm. setting it up. But I think doing it would be a smart move. It would be great. And so he's obviously mastered this. So there's a lot to be learned here, I think.
I have the feeling myself that the more you use these terminal programs is a bit like it's a bit like being able to use Morse code when you're a ham radio operator. Sure, you might have a license, but if you're not able to read Morse code, then you're not real. If you're not running Mutt as an email client, you're not a real hacker.
yeah. It's
I failed them both, Dave.
Yeah. I know. I back in the day, I used to use in the very early days of email. Early for us anyway, because we moved from the university standard way of doing email to the internet's way of doing it, and then we installed email everywhere, and we were using sort of bog standard Unixy mail things like bin mail and send mail and all of that sort of stuff, and the mail clients were. Yeah, like say bin mail or Elm, or and then we went into MH and XEX, XMH and EXMH, all of which did these things. So I've been playing in that area, and I've had enough of it. And I never,
I thought this was going.
At the end of it, I sort of went, okay, so now maybe I should try the same with Mutt. And then I went, oh. Can't be bothered anymore, but I should. But I'm enthused by this, so I must go and have a bash at this. Thunderbird's great and all, but there are times when doing stuff with a mail client like this would be really good. So it's good, really good show. I enjoyed it a lot.
Excellent. Picking a fourth, Brian in Ohio. Talks about the fourth language and with different versions, where you can get them and the pros and cons. Didn't even know this was a thing, Dave.
Yeah. I don't really know much about fourth, but I did tinker with it back in the BBC Micro days in the early 80s, where there was a ROM you could buy with fourth on it. But this is really good. This is really good. And it's a very odd language, but very powerful if you're prepared to make the move into it. It's pretty interesting.
Cool. If Brian ever leaves, you'll have to change his handle, if he ever moves to cross the state line to somewhere else.
Yes, Brian X in Ohio. Yeah.
Brian's so, not in Ohio anymore.
Yes. Intrigued to know where he goes with fourth. Now he's worked out which version he's going to use. I'm most interested to hear what he's actually doing with it and that type of thing. It's very cool, but a lot of really relevant information here, and obviously the voice of somebody who really knows what they're about. So that's fantastic.
That is the end of the shows for this month. Normally I would skip forward, but we've decided in the interest of time we'll cut that out of the script this week. So we'll do the missed comments from last month. And this one was on engineering notation by myself, and Kevin O'Brien said it was an odd word to use. Do you really call exponents Suffuscus, where you're from. I've never heard that usage before. And to which I replied...
Which is further down the list there, 3454.
Okay. Shall we do those, seeing as we're on them?
The comments to pass shows...
Let's stick with the list. You can do it.
Let's go with the thing in order, yeah. 2169, yep. How I connect to the awesome Oddcast Planet on mobile by Clacker. He commented on his own show. Things have happened with IRC since 2016. In 2020...
Wow, what's that, 2016? Wow.
I know. It seems like only yesterday, didn't it? In 2020, Taj Zara recorded HPR 3034, and he gives a link to it as an update to this show explaining how you can make Matrix authenticate your NIC when it connects to IRC.
Cool. And I'm happily using Element client to connect into IRC now via
Element. Right, okay. It's brilliant. I haven't done that. I really should. Yeah.
Really, it was just click the link. It worked. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it's clever stuff.
Tlatu's comment on Tlatu's Porteous show, and it's by HHSKLHHSKLADB. Porteous modularity. Nice exposition. Some things would need further / correct explanation also to Tlatu! Exclamation mark. Blame it on Porteous, not so well owned documentation. Now and here only this, what is very important, though not Porteous specific. Porteous XZM modules, and they are offs, squash, XFS, etc. For an example, slacks, do not overwrite anything on your machine. They interrupt your file system calls and make them believe that there are things there that are not really there. So deactivating a module or restarting gives you an unchanged file system again. And if two programs conflict in shared resource file versions, you need not uninstall something, you just activate / deactivate the modules. These modules may just be different versions of one library file. That is, you can make a single file or directory a module, and always your initial will not be corrupted by workarounds. Hard to read, but very good comment.
Yeah.
Might be worth a show in itself, because that's like a sprinkle of gold dust right there.
Yes. The show was in 2018, 2672 by Clatu. So for me, I'd need to go back and remind myself what that was about. But yeah, it looks like there's some really useful information there.
And I would love to know what HHSKLADBY's handle is, and if they could record a show and submit it to us. Although, if they're listening to 2018 now, we may not get a show until 2028. Which is fine.
Indeed. So the next one is a comment on Taj Sara's show from Clacker, 3034 the show is. Most Freenode channels have since moved to Libera. Libera chat? I'm not sure. I'll make a show about why and a show about how to connect to Libera, and here's the spoiler. And he refers to a link connecting to Libera chat through Matrix. Instead of hash freenode underscore hash podcast planet colon matrix.org use / podcast planet colon Libera under dot chat. Yes, they have their own gateway. Instead of chatting with at app service - IRC colon matrix dot org to store your login and password, chat with at app service colon Libera dot chat. Very good. I would need
absolutely
to know that.
Excellent.
I wanted to play games with IRC. That's very, very useful.
And Taj did commit himself to two shows, if I'm reading that correctly. But I'll make a show about why and a show about how. That's two shows there. just saying, not that I have a list on my desk or anything. Yeah. No.
But it's just grown. But the list that doesn't exist. Yeah.
Insert sound of handwriting in the background. Ken Fallon says, to a show about Ken Fallon, to a comment about Kevin that we just read earlier about suffixes. Kevin's comment saying that he'd never heard them called suffixes before. They probably don't, but I did. The goal of this series is to communicate via audio the location of the symbol. Although looking at the definition, it's not a bad word to use. Thefreedictionary.org .com/suffixes.html. Suffixes are
morphemes.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry. Such a group of letters with particular semantic meaning that are added onto the end of root words to change their meaning. Suffixes are one of the two prominent kinds of affixes, and the other kind is prefixes, which come at the beginning of the root word. It's amazing, Dave, when you've got dyslexia or something, how much you don't care about stuff like this.
Yeah. It's difficult enough just getting through all this weird
exactly,
stuff.
Yeah. But my goal with Kevin, brace yourself. There's going to be a lot more stuff where I'm bending the boundaries of usage of words with some of the other stuff that I'm coming up with, that I'm trying to explain. I'm currently putting something into my head to try and explain reactants. So, yeah. Tears will be flowing out of your eyes when you discover what I'm going to use for explaining some of that stuff.
Yep.
Do you want to do the last one?
Sorry. My daughter's sending me messages which I'm trying hard to ignore and failing. Great reminder, says Trey. Comment 3 to your engineering notation show. Thanks, Ken. I've been using these prefixes for decades and take them for granted. Thanks for the reminder that this is not common knowledge. It also reminds me of a question for which I've never found a good answer. In North America, capacitance is expressed in microfarads or picofarads, but nanofarads is not used. Instead, you will see values like 10,000 picofarads or 0.01 microfarads. So go figure.
Yeah, can't add to that, but if you did know the answer, that would make a good show. Genuinely, I know I say that all the time, but actually I usually also mean it. But in that case, I am interested. If somebody did know the answer, could be a bit like the why there are 8 spaces in front of a Fortran program that's Klaatu asked on GNU World Order. So we've covered all the other comments, I'm guessing.
There was a time I could have answered that, but I've completely forgotten Fortran now. But anyway.
Oh, it was punch cards. The first ones were
absolutely control.
But
it's one of these certain columns have certain significance as a continuation column and a label column and all that stuff. And then the back end of your card was an 8 column number, so if you dropped them, you could resort them.
So there's comments. Begone, foul procrastinator, from me. I forget what that's about. Oh, crawl for shows. Of course it was. Theme was possible cause of solution to subscriber attribution trying again without encryption. Okay, this is me commenting. We've already covered this. This is me commenting on the other show. Should I read it? Recordings? I'll give you a quick fast forward of it. So we've done the show. General layout is gone from 1:10 being shaved off, so it's now everything we've already covered.
Okay. In that show last week and also today, we've
mostly
all of this ground. Yep.
So there was one vote to keep the music, keep the text to speech. It'd be nice to keep the old music though somewhat quieter, as an opinion. And then episodes in Spanish and other languages. So the question, I've been asked if we accept episodes in Spanish. This is something people would be interested in the main feed. If so, how often and what about other languages? So I've got asked by a host, can they submit a show in Spanish? And yeah, I didn't instinctively know what the answer to that question would be. I still don't.
No. The sort of feeling that I didn't actually voice at the time was, I'm all for all manner of different languages, but it would, just like when you watch, and I do watch things on YouTube in other languages, but they are made much more accessible if there are subtitles. The closed caption stuff in YouTube is provided by a lot of people. I'm currently watching a lot of Japanese stuff because my kids are hoping to go to Japan next year. The English subtitles are absolutely brilliant. And they're not auto-generated. They're made by the hosts and that type of thing. So something, some sort of written translation of what was in the content would be so helpful, because just like if you're trying to learn a language, watching something in that language but with a translation can be amazingly helpful to get a better handle on the language. So that was the only thought I had on this. I should have sent an email to that effect, actually, but somehow I didn't.
Andrew Conway says, I have no objection, but my language skills aren't up to much beyond English and perhaps French, so I wouldn't understand most non-English shows, unfortunately. I do try to speak more slowly and clearly in recording for HPR than I do normally, as I'm conscious that the audience aren't all primary English speakers. I realize I fail at this, especially when excited. Andrew, aka McNally.
Yes.
Okay, I owe him a beer for that one.
The next one. Hi, Andrew. I do not know. Perhaps try and make a French or Spanish channel, or at Ken, make a Brazil Portuguese channel. Those guys are doing so much in open source these days. This came from JWP.
Yes. Easier said than done. Technically, all this is possible. Because
resource.
Well, there's human resources, but there's also the how do I check for spam? Yep, this is a comment I made on the
that's a good point.
Claudio Miranda has submitted a show on this, a Spanish show, and it's in the feed. It wasn't Claudio who proposed this. But I'm interested to see how it goes. And you know what we could do is, I've been asked at FOSDEM as well, you know, is it possible to, because, you know, obviously where we were, German, French, Dutch, people are interested in other languages. So if this was a thing, we could have Hacker Public Radio, but for under different rules, but multi-language. And then we have it, you know, speaking to you as the other janitor, Dave, we have the series, we have the tags, we can do this technically. It's not an issue. The question is, do we put it into the main feed or not? So submit the shows. Let's have a listen and see what happens.
Yeah. I agree with that, actually, because I'm quite looking forward to hearing Claudio's show that he's submitted, because Spanish, I don't know any Spanish, though. I've been to Spain and I've heard the language, and you can pick up a fair bit, you know, just from context and stuff. So I'd be interested just to hear if I could do anything with it. And, you know, languages are fascinating. But yeah. But there might also be the case of, I just missed that. I tuned out totally, as that can happen.
Yeah. So I will say, though, that if you're doing a technical show in a language, that is a great way to learn the language, because that really helped me learning Dutch. Because you go into a meeting and it's like, I don't know, we had 2 new servers nodig, and with them Rakke in the data center, and then komen jullie terug met 8 at lunchtide, and you know, what? Something about servers in the data center, and then you go for lunch. Okay, yeah, that's pretty much it, you know.
Yeah.
So it is a great way to learn a language. Then you're screwed, of course, when you go out and somebody wants to ask you the way to the bibliothèque or something, or to the library or something. But it's a start.
Sure.
So Claudio says, I think it would be a great idea. Maybe put a disclaimer at the beginning stating in which language the episode is in before it begins, and those not interested can just skip. Yeah, that's definitely something. I think what you suggest as well, Dave, is good to have a transcript available. That would also be useful. I was personally thinking of doing a show on Gaelic. I was kind of fluent in Irish Gaelic, Irish as it's known in Ireland, but Gaelic as it's known elsewhere. Childhood playground sort of level. And I was thinking how to approach that. Definitely have the translation in the show notes, but possibly maybe doing it afterwards, the English trans, you know, read it once in Irish and then do it in English afterwards. Mm. And there are reasons for doing that. It would be useful. It's something that I've been asked on more than one occasion to. For some reason, Dutch people, there are a large amount of Dutch people who believe that Irish is not a real language, that they think what I'm talking now is what we consider to be Irish, an Irish version of English.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that is not a completely, yeah, exactly. It's not a completely different language. Okay, but anyway.
Yeah. It's one of the is it a Celtic based language?
But we will cover that in the show, Dave. You're wasting it.
It's just, it's really interesting because there's so many Celtic languages around. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So,
but it would be interesting to see how that would pan out and what people would think of it. But not too many in the feed, and if there is, I'm sure after a period of time, people, it'll peter out or not. We'll see.
So DNT, who is do not translate me at pm.me, I like this, says in reply to this thread. I think a non-English show could initially be posted on the main feed, and then depending on the volume, it could be split off into a separate feed.
Good idea.
That the show has been in English, but has nonetheless attracted a contribution not in English. I wonder if it would be useful to encourage non-English shows to declare whether they invite other hosts to record an English adaptation, not a translation of their show, or maybe the license says it all. And I guess it's only a matter of time before someone posts a show in Interlingua. Cool. Had Esperanto in the past.
Actually, that email pretty much summarizes my entire feelings on it.
Yep.
And it's good to be sitting here debating something on the channel, not actually knowing how it's going to pan out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, not people getting stressed about stuff or whatever. Or also, mostly, not having to do anything about it, per se.
just watch it blow past.
Yeah, watch it. Yeah, because, you know, we could split off domain names, different feeds, not really a huge problem. Yeah. Technically, it's an evening's work. But, yeah, there you go. Sigflub says, thanks for adding links to my episode. I'm usually not that good with show notes. I think she is confusing the mail list with admin.hgr.
Yes. Still, it's that was you who you added some links to that show.
Yes, I did.
You're usually better at it than I am. I just process them quickly and say, right, that's done. I can go back to eating my dinner or whatever I'm doing.
Yeah, we're just not paying you enough, Dave.
That's what it is.
Kevin.
So, sorry, I was just going to do Kevin O'Brien's email, who says, great week of shows. I was struck by how good the shows were this week and that they include shows from new or rarely heard contributors. I hope that continues. John Culp brought back memories of the days before podcasts when I could walk around listening to tapes. Jezra gave a perfect example of what it means to be a hacker. Yeah, well said. Lovebug explained how he got into amateur radio. Operator explained how he does audio processing. And Minix explained how to use open source software to watch shows. I enjoyed all of them immensely. That's a great, great email.
It is. It's nice, actually. Get some positive feedback like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a good summary. I hadn't quite joined all those threads together. It's absolutely right.
Yeah, true. Sigflip wanted an image added of the Pinephone running a GIMP on a cell phone or a mobile phone if you live in this part of the world, for obvious reasons, obviously. So, yes, of course. I have a question for other Pinephone users. Does your phone run really, 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 really hot, or is it just mine?
Interesting question.
And the last one was HPR community news. I don't think we need to do that.
Nope.
Do we have any other business, Dave?
Finding the tab and engaging
brain. Yes, we do. We have a rant here from Ken.
We do. Yes. Do you want to rant it?
The rant is, if you are sending us a link, if you're not uploading your show, you need to send us a URL. It needs to be a publicly available URL, not behind authentication. So if you yourself cannot get it from an anonymous IP address using wget or curl, then don't use the URL thing. Your show will be considered to be not available on the server. Okay? It is a non-posted show. Your show is liable to get deleted. I've just made that up at the moment. Because I'm angry. Yeah, Ken is... No, it's not posted on the server. It's not available. The show is not posted. Yeah, your server, it has to be available or we can't process it. So you're basically blocking up a slot for somebody else that could be using it. You may now speak of older shows on archive.org.
Seems reasonable enough, though. Yes, older shows on archive.org. I managed to, by dint of every day, or pretty much every day, going and uploading 5 shows of the old ones, which I do 5 at a time because the Internet Archive can get a bit overloaded at times. Mm-hmm. I've noticed it. Sometimes it takes 7-8 hours before it actually gets through them all. That was the sort of time for the last lot. I managed to do 115 by that measure. And I've added a count of how many are left because it's useful to see 369 still to do. So we're getting close.
It's amazing we're saying like we're getting close with 369 episodes. You know, any other measure of any other podcast will be like, oh my God, that's like 30 years of shows.
But if I can manage to do 100 a month, I won't guarantee that. But you should get that done in 4 months.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, so just as long as I don't forget each day to upload some stuff. Good.
I'm not getting annoyed with people with links. Sending links, it's not always obvious when you're using services like when you shared services like Google or whatever, that you're not sharing it publicly. I think recently Google has done something. I even see my son sent me a link from their Google Cloud stuff in school, and it had worked before, and all of a sudden you needed to be logged in order to download via the URL. So,
great. Yeah. Okay. I just put one last comment about tags and summaries. In case you hadn't noticed that the project is finished, and just to refer to show 3, 4, 5, 6, which is the last community news where the list of all the contributors was posted. And I'm not going to refer to that anymore in future.
But Dave, have you done all the to do with the techie shows, Dave? Are they done? Are they available in the database, Ken?
Cough. We'll get to them at some point.
At some point, indeed. All right, do we have anything else?
I don't think we do, and I think that's us.
Okay. Thanks for all your help and support, Dave. It's massively appreciated.
No problem.
And tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker
Public
Radio!
Hooray.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR is kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.